Hey, hello, and welcome to the episode 67 of the Collaborative Business Podcast. My name is Peter Simons, and I'm your host. Today, I'm in conversation with Bill Davidson, the founder of Alliance Analytics Software. You can watch this conversation on my website over at petersimons.com or listen to it in iTunes or Stitcher. Bill, welcome to the Collaborative Business Podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to experienced Alliance professionals, and I noticed an impressive list already on your both on your website and your LinkedIn profile. But let me not do the introduction from that perspective. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us who is Bill Davidson and what do you do?
Okay, I'm Bill Davidson. I'm in currently in Chicago, Illinois. I've been involved in many business aspects, sales, marketing, channels, channel management. I've founded a couple of different companies, one in technology and one in biotech. We're hoping to see how that second one pans out. Some of the companies I worked for was GE Capital IT Solutions in their infrastructure management space, and in that, this will come back to play in a minute. But we sold solutions that were disparate in nature to manage big enterprises, so routers, hubs, databases, application servers, web servers, and all of those things, and trying to determine where root causes were in order for the technology groups within an organization to fix those problems. Mm-hmm. And my MBA is from Xavier University in Cincinnati. My undergraduate degree is from the Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. I am a little younger than I look, I hope, still.
That's for the viewers only. So if you're only listening, you need to look into the video now.
Yes, that's right. I will have to check that out later and perhaps change my picture profile. That's really, I didn't add in the startup companies. Did a bunch of startup companies, you know, on the road, testing new products out. One in 19 make it, so there was a number of ones that I worked for that did not. There were a couple that did as well. I started Alliance Analytics in 2003/2004. We didn't get the patent until 2012, so it took a relatively long amount of time to do that. So there was a lot of waiting and so on. And the other thing about Alliance Analytics that I'll get into too, is that we were so far and just now catching up to where the market is, I guess. Companies at the time when we started weren't looking at predictive analytics. Big data was not even a word yet. Predictive analytics wasn't really a word either at that time. It was feel-good measurements, surveys against, considered against what results were in alliance and channel partnerships at that time. And I put a big spin on it that I guess I'm going to start, and I keep mentioning that. That's really about it for me.
Okay.
What's next?
And you already gave some interesting hooks to continue our conversation.
I did.
So, but before we dive in, what is for you an alliance? Because I heard alliances, partnerships, channels. What is an alliance for you?
Alliance is two or more companies working towards a common goal, be it research on a new product, bringing a product to market, product testing, manufacturing, in a technology space, working together on joint marketing, reselling, channel partnerships, and so on. So alliances, channels, and business partnerships. You can put any one of the words in for the other. 80% of all the management of all of those things are roughly the same in each industry that you mm-hmm. have, still managing to a goal.
So it's a pretty broad spectrum.
It is, how I look at it is that way. It's kind of an all-encompassing.
Okay. So, and then when we look at your company, Alliance Analytics, and mm-hmm. the work that you do,
it covers the complete spectrum?
It does. It starts in the selection process, joint development of agreements, and management of that partnership. And I'm just going to use the word partnership because they are so changeable. All the way through. I have two patents. Currently, I've got on file a couple more that are coming. And they relate to not a best practice, but an effective way to select, create agreements, and manage these partnerships, any type of third-party partnership.
So tell us a little bit more about those patents, please.
Okay. The first one really involves looking at, when this is where it varies from most out there, it looks at qualitative data, feedback data from partnerships back into the vendor or business partner that they have as far as what they think, how they feel, kind of like the social intangibles, if you will. And most methods today just do it from that perspective, partners only, and these are the results. I brought it into bringing the vendor or the first group within the relationship, as well as those working with them, and setting up so that both groups, the vendor and the partner, the vendor's an interchangeable word, I hope too, answering the same questions from their perspectives at the touch points between the organizations, weighted in scales and in groups and categories, and then compare all of that to results within the performance area of the partnership. So you know what the causes are to create the effects that are desired by both parties. And it shows the things that they're doing well, and it also shows the things that aren't going so well that are impacting the partnership's ability to perform new objectives.
Okay, so and if companies use your software, which includes patented elements.
Yes.
What will be the benefits for the company?
The first is, a big struggle is, well, what are benchmarks, what are the best practices that we use, and how do we get them, how do we update them, and so on. Well, if you use one of the things that they'll get from what they're getting today is, you start with a benchmark, you've got to keep updating it. And you're not really updating your own information, you're updating everybody else's information. Mm-hmm. So you gain really no competitive advantage from that. So one of the things they'll get is they'll be able to create their own benchmarks and their own best practices based on how they do things, their processes, their policies, their programs, their personnel interacting with those partnerships. So they're moving away from industry best practices and industry standards, because I don't believe that industry standards by themselves and the way they're done, they're really going to work, because they come from those best practices, and there's no way to really consistently update, validate all that data across those organizations.
So the industry best practices is more or less a snapshot, where with your software you're really continuously updating the best practice of your own company.
Yes. And it affects both sides. The partner will see the things they need to do, and the vendor will see things that they need to do. And when they're asked the same question, since they're weighted and scaled and so on, you get the meeting of the minds, how close you are to an agreement, which is really what a partnership's about.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be able to see you're going to have your give and take and your tugs back and forth. And at some point, you will agree that a goal is then set, these are the things we need to fix. The software really identifies those things that need to be addressed positively or negatively, so you can reallocate funds, you can reallocate resources, right people, right time, presentations, marketing funds, all of those things, where do you direct that money and so on, and how do you improve the potential outcomes of the use of all of those things between the vendor and the partner. So not only utilizing the partner's best stuff, but also utilizing yours as a company as well. There's big savings in that, A, and B, there's an increase of result somewhere on that also.
But I maybe a little bit playing devil's advocate here. Sure. When you look at, I would say that the result that comes out of your software is as good as the data that goes into it.
Okay, I didn't cover that. The result information is actually your result pulled in from your systems. Go ahead.
But there are two partners involved.
Yes.
So it are our systems as partner company, and it are the systems of our partner's company.
Right.
How transparent are they? How willingness is a partner in the creation process to provide the data?
Well, the data that the vendor or the main partner pulls in, or the system pulls in, is the results data. That doesn't come from the partner. It only comes from whoever the lead is on that relationship. The information that's pulled in by or for both parties are these feedback, the feedback ability, the feedback questions, and the answers as they relate to those policies, programs, personnel, and processes, and so on, against the results. But so they're only asking, and it's really distributed by touch points between the organizations. So the marketing guys aren't going to answer any financial questions or delivery questions, and the accounts payable person isn't going to make any comments on the effectiveness of the marketing materials that were developed. They're not going to make any inferences on what the ROI was for a particular area. They're not going to do that. They're going to answer something that'll take them 10 minutes to answer and return. And it can be anonymous, and it doesn't have to be anonymous. It depends. I assume as your partnerships evolve, you may want to add people's names so follow-ups can be done, but it doesn't have to be done.
Okay. So, and how often do they enter their data?
It's quarterly. What we've seen is that if you do it annually, the year's over. You can't do anything. You can't make any adjustments midstream. So
no.
You're concentrating on fixing things that were wrong last year. And that is a huge benefit for these companies as well. That doesn't help you. So you have your kickoff meeting in January and February, and everybody's rah-rah, and you're trying to fix problems from the previous year. Those may, based on what you present to them, those may not be the problems you're going to have this year. So you're again behind the eight ball trying to make these repairs versus doing it ongoing and having the time within the fiscal period in order to make the change to have some impact, whether it's an increase in results or decrease in cost or both.
Okay. When we go back to the beginning of this software, what was the driver for you to come up with it? Was it based on your own experience?
Yes, it was based on my own experience. A couple things that helped. I knew a lot about continuous improvements. I was in the ISO space, ISO 9000 space for a little. I used some of that information. I worked for GE Capital IT Solutions, and we resold a number of software solutions from the people you would think, you know, the Remedies, the Tivolis, the BMCs, Microsoft, and so on. All those guys and how they interacted and so on. And we were looking to develop a lights out environment, so if something went off, you knew where the root cause was, and that's what you had to fix. My specific experience, I worked with these vendors that I mentioned, and as a reseller, you know, I experienced all the things that went wrong. Because, you know, most of that time, anybody that became a partner was anybody that raised their hand and said, "I want to be a partner."
Yeah.
Now that has changed to some degree, but you know, the software revolution or evolution was really 95, 6, 7, 8 was really the revolution for it. You know, Microsoft's product set from Workgroup and so on was early 90s at best. So that's where that information came. And from that, I developed a model that was not similar, but kind of based on what that IT infrastructure management was looking like.
Okay. And what kind of typical customers? Are there typical customers, or what kind of customers are using your software at the moment?
At the moment, there are very few, limited, and I would say none, really. We had a few major setbacks as the recession started, and we've really not been able to make a real big, real traction in the markets as of yet. And I'm hoping, really, this gets us back going.
Okay. And any pilots?
Working on getting a few pilots out, but we have not had the trigger pulled as of yet.
Okay. So, how do you run your business? Do you run it based on alliances yourself?
I run it on completing the rest of the software and doing some consulting around, or starting to doing some consulting around around the software as a precursor to having it installed somewhere as a pilot.
Okay, I understand. So if you go back to your career, your learning experience so far, is there a specific alliance or collaboration that you've been involved in that taught you the most on creating alliances?
That would be a couple with GE Capital IT Solution, which had multiple vendors at that time.
An example you can share, maybe anonymous, but what were the learnings?
The learnings were the partners always lied about their forecasts. The vendors seldom showed up when they were asked to.
Mm-hmm.
We really didn't. There was no management within the partnership at all, as far as assisting. You know, now they have lunch and learns, and all of those types of things, and there weren't really very many of those either. And IT Solutions at GE was a big group, and there was very little going on with any type of assistance. You're basically signed up and on your own, and you had to identify what were the things that were lacking, and what were the things that were good. You know, their ability to process orders was good, but and ship the software, but there really wasn't much else that I saw that was done really well.
So those were the early days of partnering and in the software channel.
It was all the way through 2000, 2002. Yeah.
Yeah. It's I remember that as times that still a lot was possible, and so over the past 15 years the whole industry evolved and matured much more.
Yes.
And I think the industry had to mature.
I would say now and still, alliances and channels still don't meet objectives 50, 60% of the time. They're still, you know, as good as we're getting at it, they're really not getting much better. And that's why I think that implementing what we do have, what I have, will certainly make great leaps into getting better at it.
Mm-hmm.
No one's really considering this soft qualitative data because it's soft qualitative data. But if you replicate the times that you do it, you know, four times a year, then all of a sudden it becomes fact over time, like anything else.
Yeah.
It becomes fact over time.
Agree.
So it's data that you can actually depend on and predict from as well.
Yeah. Very interesting. So if people are at the moment getting into alliances or any type of business-to-business collaboration, what would be your number one recommendation to them and why?
The number one recommendation is to do the upfront homework. Make sure that they have the coverage that you think that you're going to need, and maybe even a backup plan as to what it may look like if what you think is going to need is different than what you thought. You're going to want to know that they have the right resources, the right type of people in the organizations. Everyone uses cultural fit. It's really, you get along with them enough that you're going to be able to meet the objectives that you've got, whether it's doing R&D and meeting a budget or meeting a timeline or a milestone, whether it's a IT channel or some type of reselling channel. Do they have the coverage? Will they provide the support? how much is it going to cost you, those kinds of things. You want to make sure as you're a vendor starting out that you look at all of those things and how willing companies are to really go to work for you. It's easy to raise your hand and say, I want to be your partner. Very easy. There's no commitment. And you know, charging an upfront fee to a potential partner, really, I don't think it's very effective either. That's skin of the game, yes, but it's not a huge amount, so they can really walk away from it if it's not working out. If you're not giving them the time and you're not managing it correctly or willing to, it's going to fail.
I don't know what the fee on average is nowadays, but I remember late 90s, early 2000s, that the fee was just enough to cover the expense that you would normally have on using the software. So it was easy to become a partner and pay the fee, and the return on investment was already that you would be able to use the software yourself for the fee.
Thank you. That's great.
It was really low. So from that perspective, it's not really skin in the game. And I remember indeed that management was not there. You were a partner, you were on your own, as you said.
Yes.
So I really liked the recommendation, do your homework. And that's why I immediately had to smile when you said that. Because I've heard it before, and I tell many of my customers and people in trainings as well, start in the beginning, do your homework. And yes, of course, your CEO will sometimes come in and tell you that we're going to partner with such and so company. Sure. But still, you have to go back and do the homework.
Right. And when I say homework, too, the patents that I have actually cover that selection process and the questions that you need to ask and how they're weighted amongst other questions. And it looks at what those partners' responses are. It also feeds into the agreement part as to how to structure that. And then, in addition, it feeds into the management of. So one of the benefits that I guess I didn't get to was that the software or the patents look at all the interconnections between selection, agreement, and management on the results. So you may be able to point back to something in the selection process that's actually impacting a particular result, or causing a change in a particular aspect of the agreement. And this can be done, you know, blanketly across all partnerships, which I don't recommend. Better to do it individually per partnership.
So you could do it already from a website, I assume, in a partner selection, depending on the type of partnership you're in.
You could. But if you don't get the warm and fuzzy from those partners, and a lot of companies that do the sign up, but if they're going to sell your stuff or work with you, you really need to go see them. Otherwise, it's just talking to a black box. Even if you've got Skype, it doesn't matter. If you want to do a partnership, go see the guy. That tells them that you're willing to spend the resources.
Yeah.
Make a sales trip and do four of them at the same time.
Good point. So is there a typical book, business book or book about collaboration that you would like to recommend to our listeners and viewers?
I've got a 4.5-year-old at home. I don't know if this is appropriate venue for that, but most of the books that I read have very little to do about business-to-business collaborations. I read a bunch a few years ago in developing the patents and understanding alliances and channels, but I don't really have a book to recommend at this point.
Okay. Well, even a good Git story can be very enlightening for many CEOs. So.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Well, Bill, where can people find more about you and about your business?
They can find me at bdavidson@allianceanalytics.com. Or they can give a call to myself at the office, which is 312-440-0581.
Okay, excellent. And is there anything else you would like to share with our audience that we haven't discussed yet?
I'd say more of an offer. If you would really like more information and have a detailed conversation, prospects, but companies out there that want to know a little more and what it is in a little more detail than what we could get done in this podcast, I'd be happy to chat with them. I really would.
Excellent. Well, we will include a link to your website in the show notes so that people can easily find you as well. They already have your phone number and your email address.
That would be great.
It's a good way to reach out to you. Thank you very much for being my guest today, Bill.
Peter, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Collaborative Business Podcast with Bill Davidson. As usual, you can find the links to what we discussed in the show notes over at petersimons.com. And do remember to check out the new Alliance Mastery website at alliancemastery.com. And when you find these conversations in the Collaborative Business Podcast of value, then please take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. Reviews will help to increase the visibility of a podcast in the iTunes system, and with that will help more people find the Collaborative Business Podcast. Thank you in advance for leaving your review. And that's it for this week. Bye for now, and until next week. Thank you.